So in this text, we have been studying about the various impurities of the mind, like anger, greed, jealousy, etc., hatred, selfishness, which disturb our mind and create problems around us. And then we have also been studying about the internal problems, the disturbances, the agitations of the mind. And we have studied in this text how we should remove each one of them. How should we remove anger? By reducing desire. How should I remove fear? By seeing oneness. How should I remove greed? By developing contentment. So we have seen in this text the techniques for purifying the mind, and also the internal disturbances through meditation, through compassion for others, through acceptance of whatever nature and the world gives us. So with all those things, I can reduce my internal agitations and my external disturbances, in my relationship with people. If I get angry, or if I get upset, or if I get jealous, or if I develop arrogance or hypocrisy. So we say, that's too much work. It's too much. I have to sit down and remove each one of them. Anger, okay, I have to study in this book how to remove anger, and then how to remove greed. And then jealousy comes, and then suddenly I'll get some disturbances from my mother-in-law or something like that. I just keep using that. But anybody. It could be my husband, my child, an earthquake or shooting in the neighborhood. Or sometimes I sit and intrinsically I get all these, depression. And so I have to remove them all one by one. It's too much work. I can't do it. So we put the book aside and say, forget it. We want a shortcut. Everybody wants the easiest path. Within 30 minutes, the problem should be solved, like a typical TV episode you watch. There is a problem. The villain comes, he commits a murder, and in the process of running, he kidnaps the heroine. So now by that time he have a commercial. then the hero shows up, and so now he has about 20 minutes to solve the crime, catch the criminal, free the heroine, and send the villain to jail, and then everybody lives happily ever after. So we want all problems to be solved in 30 minutes. We don't have any patience to sit for hours and days, solving. In the olden days, they used to have cricket matches in India that lasted 5 days. And people said, that's too long. So now they have come up with 20 overs, which is in 3 hours, the problem is solved. Somebody wins. So everybody wants in a hurry. So we say, give me a shortcut. What is the easy way? I don't want to spend all this time. So the teacher says, you want a shortcut? Okay, here it is. So we'll do verse number 22, page 50. We'll chant, and then the part of it we have done before, the first line, the second line we'll be covering today. Rajastamascha sattvena. Sattvam chopashamena cha. Sattvam chopashamena cha. Etat sarvam gurau bhaktya. Sarvam gurau bhaktya. Purusho hyanjasa jayet. Sajayet. So last week we had studied when there is rajas and tamas. Rajas means agitation and tamas means laziness. And how do we solve? By sattva, by purity of mind. And then ultimately you go beyond even all the disturbances of the mind by meditation. That was the first line. And we went into detail about 2 weeks ago. But the second line says, all this, whatever you want, solve the problems of your mind, of external, all the impurities. How? Etat sarvam guru bhaktya. All of these, how do I solve? Shortcut, guru bhaktya, by devotion to the guru. So find a guru and develop devotion to him or her. And what will happen? Purusha here means human being, that person. He anjasa jayet. He means for certainly anjasa jayet. Very quickly he will win over all his problems. So they say, is that all simple? Just devotion to the Guru? Yes. Just have devotion to the Guru. That's all you need. So this talk today, I'll mostly spend about the glory of the Guru and how the Guru helps us in our life. First of all, people say, why should I have Guru? Can't I get whatever I need from a book? So they say, okay, why don't you ask that question to the book? Why do I need a guru? You can't. The book will not answer your questions. The book will just give you what is written in the book. It's not going to answer your questions. Secondly, if you say, I'm going to read a book, the book was written by some guru, by some wise person, by some, like, this book has been written by Swami Tejomayananda, who is the worldwide head of the mission, who is our guru. So all the spiritual books, whether the Bible or the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita or the Guru Granth Sahib, they're all written by great masters, prophets, and teachers. So when you are reading the book, you are approaching a guru. But we have to see that in the world, nothing can be successfully accomplished without a teacher. Anything you want to accomplish, you want to play golf, person can say, I can buy videos and DVDs of golf and watch Tiger Woods and Mickelson and Arnold Palmer and all playing and watch all their moves and all the instructions. Yes, but you still, when you get on the golf course, your stance will be off and the club will go one way, the ball will go. So you need a pro. You need a teacher who will tell you, okay, this is how you stand, you bend your knees, and this is how you keep. All those instructions, and then he will watch whether your stance is okay, whether your angle, how you're hitting the ball, what kind of club you are choosing. Similarly, you want to study mathematics or physics or chemistry. We send our children to school. We don't tell them, just pick up a book and read. No, they can't. They have to go to a school. There is a structured environment where a teacher who will tell them, this is the math problem, this is how you solve it. And when the children have problems, they will go back to the teacher. Okay, teacher, I have a problem, I don't understand. And then she will then spend her time. You want to learn computers, anything in the world you want to learn, even to learn driving. You know, we have a teacher, we have a coach who sits down and, you know, patiently tells us to learn cooking. You know, we all, those who cook, they sat with their mother and she taught them, or father, or whoever cooks. So anything in the world, we need to have a guru. And these are all very gross things. How to play golf, how to drive a car, how to earn money. These are all worldly things. But to deal with the mind which is the most subtle of our equipments. We have the body, which is gross, and the mind and intellect are very subtle. And with the subtle equipment, when I have to deal and when problems arise in that subtle equipment, even for the worldly things, if I need a guru, how about more for the mind or the intellect when there are problems, when there are doubts? And on the spiritual path, it's not a physical path. It's not a mountain you have to climb, or it's not a race you have to run. It is how you slowly quieten your mind and slowly turn the mind's attention inward through the Lord's presence. And so the spiritual journey is finding God, but finding God not only in the church or temple, but finding Him within, finding God in all people. So it's a very subtle journey. It's not a race. It's not a place to reach. It's not a time, you know, 10 years from now, I will realize. It's not sitting in one place on one leg. You know, people do that, all those things. But it is a spiritual journey within. And there are a lot of obstacles in our spiritual journey. The mind gets agitated, gets disturbed. It gets confused. The intellect doesn't know what is right, what is wrong, what is in my path. And so a teacher is required on this subtle path. Here I have listed 5 of the greatest problems that we all have. You can call them five problems, five sorrows, five discomforts in our life. And the number one we have listed is ignorance. Ignorance is the number one problem. Even in the world, you know, if you don't know how to ride a bike, you cannot ride a bike. If you don't know how to spell, you cannot write English. If you don't know how to add, you cannot do math. More so in the spiritual field. And when we talk about ignorance, we don't talk about, you know, there may be a person who may be a professor or great scholar, and he's a scholar of philosophy. He knows the details of four or five different religions and can chant in different languages and can give beautiful discourses on philosophy and religion and has multiple PhDs. He teaches other PhDs. Or there may be a person who has studied the internet and can surf and can get knowledge from all over the world. Or there may be a person who is proficient in, you know, different skills and has what we talk about ignorance is not about the world, not about language, but about myself. Ignorance of who I really am and what is my path to spirituality and what is my goal in this life. And that is the number one ignorance that we all suffer from, is we don't know where we are going. We don't know what is our goal. And then we don't know how to get there. So a guru or a teacher is one who will show us the path, first of all. Then direct us, give us directions. Okay, this is how you go there. And when there are problems, and a true teacher is always with you, available for advice, available for guidance, available for instructions. And so when obstacles come, it's like when you're going in a strange country and then you go to one particular point and then you don't know where to go. You know, you need to go to a friend's house or go to a restaurant. Nowadays, of course, we have GPS. But in the good old days, you had to stop the car and roll the window down and then ask somebody, you know, stop somebody going by, how do I go to this restaurant or this street? So that is your guru at that spot, because he or she tells you how to get to your path. So in the spiritual journey also, when we have obstacles or when we get lost, then the role of a guru is very important. So not knowing who I am, then I develop an ego. I develop the second ignorance, second problem is the ego. Where I have ego can be of two kinds. One is the ego of arrogance. Do you know who I am? I am so and so. I am so great. I am so wonderful. Talking about arrogance reminds me of this couple. They just got married and the husband wanted to show who is the boss. So he says, you know what? When I come home from work, the house should be clean. I don't like a messy house. So she said, oh, that's very good. Yeah, that's good. I don't like a messy house either. And I want hot dinner on the table. She said, okay, you can have hot dinner on the table. And before I get to bed, I like to have a hot bath. So make sure the hot bath is ready. So she said, sure, darling. Then she says, you know what? After your bath, do you know who is going to dress you and comb your hair? He says, who? She says, the undertaker. So arrogance doesn't get us too far, probably to an early grave. So that is one interpretation of ego, which is arrogance, which is the pride that I am somebody special, I am great, and whatever I have accomplished, I have done it. This I and mine. And this I and mine is so interesting. Even my granddaughter, who is a year and a half, she's already talking about mine, my blanket. You know, we develop it so fast, this thing about I and mine. It's amazing to watch how this subtle ego, how very quickly it takes over us, I and mine, and this is mine, and this is, we are on, and then we are just acquiring and getting. So that is one ego. And then second ego is the sense of separation, where I think I'm a separate individual. I'm separate from all the others. And I'm separate from God. And that is the biggest problem with ego, because it separates us from our true source, which is where we came from. Just as a river separates herself from the source, But then she, of course, is on a spiritual journey. But when we separate from our source, we get lost in this world. So that is the meaning of ego. And then what that does is it creates problems in my relationships with people. Then as a consequence of ego, I get this body identification that I am this body. And that is the biggest problem that our masters have told us. And that all arises from ignorance. When I don't know who I am, then I develop this separation. And then I get firmly convinced that I am this body. And this is something we have been conditioned to think since childhood. I am this body, I am this body, I am this body, this is me, this is me, this is me. And if you believe in reincarnation, when we say it's from many lifetimes, from the time when you were a little protozoa searching for food in the water, from that time you developed this identification, I am this body, or from the time you were a plant and a bird and a fish. So whatever it be, this identification with the body is so strong that we then do anything to get what we want, to take care of. Not that it's anything wrong to take care of the body, but then that becomes our sole purpose in life, to acquire, to possess, to get. And then a person doesn't think of anything else except getting more, wanting more, more power, more. And then this develops into likes and dislikes. So I like certain people who are conducive to what I want, or who are conducive to what I think, or who will get me what I want. And even in relationships, it is all based on, okay, now with this person, you know, she makes me happy or he makes me happy. He gives me my security. He gives me my love. So even relationships are all related to the body. Even though you say, I love this person with all my heart, but inside the main purpose is, how can this person provide me what I need? So we get likes and then we get dislikes. If somebody is an obstacle in my path or doesn't give me what I want, or I develop this, you know, particular kind of identification that these people belong to my community, my church, my race, my nationality, and so we develop likes and dislikes. So when these five problems are there in our life, which I have listed here, they're called, in Sanskrit, they're called the five kleshas. These then create all the problems, but the root cause of all of them is ignorance. And ignorance can only be removed by the guru, by the teacher. There was a famous saint called Kabir Das who actually wrote a very beautiful line. He said God, you know, he worshipped God in the form of Krishna. So he said, God is standing in front of me and Guru is standing in front of me. They both appear at the same time. Whom should I bow down to first? Whose feet should I touch first? I cannot touch both. So whom should I prostrate to first? So he thinks for a while. He said, Guru. Because without Guru, I wouldn't know God. To know God, I had to have a guru. So the idea being not that the guru is greater than God, but the guru is the vehicle to reach God. And so first I have to express my appreciation to the guru, who will then direct me on my spiritual path. Also, when they talk about bhaktya, devotion, what we mean is not only just bowing down to the guru or touching his or her feet or bringing them food or, you know, maybe giving a donation. You know, that is all good. That is all one should do. That is part of one's duty. Take care of the teachers. Take care of the sannyasis, the monks. Because all of society, you look at anywhere in the world, whether it's the Christian fathers or the Buddhist monks or the Hindu sadhus, it is the duty of the householders to take care of them. Because they have given up the world to serve us for the spiritual journey, for learning the truth, and to share the truth with the rest of us. So when they have given up everything and they've given up their livelihood, their job and their family and their profession to serve us, then it is our duty to take care of them. But that is not enough. That is good to take care of these. You know, that's why one should support religious institutions, you know, monasteries and churches and temples. That is all part of one's duty. But more important than that, when we talk about bhakti or devotion, is to follow the teachings of the teacher. The teacher is not happy if you just come and bow to him or bring him food. That's okay. That is required. But more important is that, do I follow the teachings of the teacher? Do I apply them in my life? Do I think about them? Which we'll talk about next week, how to apply the teachings. So true devotion to the guru is by following the advice. So you read the scriptures, you talk to the teacher, and then you follow the advice. That is true devotion. Also, bowing down to the guru or serving the guru, it's not that the guru has a great ego and wants people to come and touch his feet or people to bow down, or I have 10,000 followers. That's not it. The main purpose of accepting the role of guru in our life with humility is that it develops a sense of, reduces the pride, reduces the arrogance. Because especially when we go on the spiritual path, it is very easy to develop the spiritual ego. I am more spiritual than the next one. I go to church, you know, every Sunday. He only goes every Easter. Or I pray, you know, so many times a day. Or I give so much in charity. Or I help so many. So ego is very quick. And especially when we start meditating and then you see some visions or you get some powers, you get some, you know, spiritual progress, then you develop an ego. I did it. You know, I did it. And the moment that I comes, that I did it, and I don't acknowledge the contribution of my guru and of the scriptures and of God. Because ultimately what we say is the guru is a reflection of God. He is a manifestation of God. God I cannot see, but when I see guru, I see God in his or her form. So you develop an ego, an arrogance, and that is very bad. Just as, say, you are the owner of a factory or you are the owner of a business. The factory is doing very well. It doubles the income and triples, and you become very rich, and then you develop the arrogance. You know what? I am the one who developed this business. You know, it was nothing, and I took it from there and up to there. I am the greatest. But think about it. In that factory, how many people helped you? You know, you had a manager, and then you had an assistant manager, and then you had a production manager who was producing the products, and then there were workers who were working, and then there were shift supervisors who were supervising them, and then when the production was made, then there were salespeople and marketing people who were traveling from one part of the country to the other to sell the product, and then there were the financial people, the you know, who kept the track of the numbers and payroll. So many people participated in your success. But if you say, I am the reason, then what's going to happen is you're going to get arrogant, and sooner or later, all those people are going to pull you down. So it is much better to say, I am so thankful to all my workers and all my managers and everybody, and give them a bonus and acknowledge their contribution. So we is more important than I. So similarly here on the spiritual path, instead of saying I did it, say it is the grace of my guru and the grace of God, because of which, first of all, even the desire to progress spiritually has to have come from previous good karmas. You have to have good karmas. You have to have good actions in the past that even bring the desire in your mind to evolve spiritually. And then all the beautiful scriptures that all these great prophets have written, and then the teachers who interpret these for us. And so many people have participated in my path. So this, in brief, is the role of the guru. The last question is, how do I find a guru? You know, people say, I have been looking, I don't find a guru. Who is a guru? I don't see a guru. In fact, I remember I was sitting in a discourse, and there was a most illustrious monk who was so evolved, such a great soul, and he had given such a beautiful talk. And at the end of that, one person gets up and says, how do I find a guru? And I wanted to tell him, I didn't want to, but I said, you idiot, I didn't tell him that. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there is this great monk standing in front of you, has given you a 1.5 hour beautiful, and you are asking him, just bow down, and this is a guru who has come in front of you. And people are so dense, it's amazing. So, so the point is that if you have the desire, if you have the strong desire that I want to learn, I want to evolve spiritually, the guru will appear. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to do anything. The guru will appear in your life. Miraculously, something will happen. Somewhere you will be drawn to a lecture or a talk or a discourse. So have the desire and keep your eyes open, and you will find a guru who will take you on the path. Thank you. It's a beautiful topic, and I enjoyed talking about it, because for me personally, I feel that when Swami Chinmayananda teacher came in my life, and then all his other subsequent Swamis, it changed my life. I think it helped me somewhat, and so that's why I wanted to share that. Thank you very much. If we have any questions or comments.
That could be considered your guru, but maybe just for that subject.
True, but I think ultimately you develop a closeness to one particular guru who then becomes your main guide and, you know, philosopher. You can't have multiple gurus you can listen to different teachers, but I think one has to develop a closeness to one path, to one teacher. Generally, I find that is generally the best. But not to be fanatical or anything, but I think also it's something like cliques. You know, you may find multiple teachers, but then there'll be one with whom your thinking is very compatible, and you find that it makes a lot of sense. You can understand him or her, and then also that somebody who is approachable. So generally, you end up kind of focusing on one. That's what I think. Just as in anything, you know, you may take tennis lessons from different teachers, and then you say, I like her the best because she, you know. So it's like that, I think. Well, I'm not a guru, so I cannot answer that question, but I don't think so. I think if they find that somebody is a sincere seeker and comes to them with sincerity, they will accept him. If somebody just casually shows up and says, hey, guru, what do you think about this? You know, I mean, they may. But I think if you have sincerity and if you show that that's what your goal is, I think they will accept you. I don't think a true teacher should not play favorites or be selective. But I mean, you know, there may be some people who are more close to the teacher because they spend more time and, you know, learn more and all. But by and large, a true guru is a fountain of love, and whoever comes and drinks from it. When you are in their presence, you feel that, oh, I am the most special person. Swami Tejomayananda, who is the writer of this book, is a typical example. You go to him and he'll talk to you like you are the number one person in the world. It's not fake, it's genuine. And then with the next person, he has the same love and compassion. And no matter which part of the world they go, they have that same love and compassion for all beings, because that is the hallmark of an evolved person who can see the oneness and accept and love all. So truly, I think a truly evolved guru would accept you if you have the sincere desire. True. That's what they say, the mother is the first guru, you know, because she teaches you how to talk, how to walk, how to eat. So mother is the first guru, and then of course the father, and then ultimately your kindergarten teacher, your older sibling. Yeah, so these are all our teachers in life, and definitely I think the role of parenting is very important. I personally, in my life, my mother, although my father was my role model, but he was quite busy in work, I patterned myself after my father because he was my role. But my mother was the one who had the biggest role. She used to take me to spiritual talks by Swami Chinmayananda and take me to temples and things. So I think she had a role in whatever, you know, to get me started on this path. And I think that's right, having the right parents as the role model. But even if you don't, but even wherever station you are in, if you have now this knowledge, to use this knowledge to progress instead of worrying about all the years that are past or if I didn't have one or whatever. But I think that's a very good point. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. I think that's a very good point. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, which is one of the very ancient Upanishad, the teacher, in his convocation address, when he's, you know, the students in those days used to live with the teacher for 12 to 14 years. They would study. And then once they were graduated, they would leave. So they were all, and it would be in a very nice, like ashram, like a monastery on the banks of the river in the forest and all that. So when he was leaving, he gives different advice in that particular Upanishad. But one of the advice he gives is that when you see a wise person or a guru or a teacher, and nobody's perfect, he says that very clearly, including I, the teacher is not perfect. So accept what is good. And if you find something that is objectionable or that, you know, you don't like, just let it be. Just ignore it. You don't have to follow everything 100% because nobody is perfect. A human is not perfect. But accept what is good. The only reason they revere the guru, you know, by the way, the word guru, gu means darkness and ru means remove. So one who removes the darkness of ignorance. So in this world, we thank people. If somebody gets me a glass of water, I say thank you. You know, somebody, I drop my keys and somebody picks it up, I say thank you. Or somebody gets me a birthday present and gets me a shirt, and then every time I wear it, I think about that person. So when we say thank you or somebody gives me a job, but how much more thankful should be to the one who has removed my ignorance of multiple lifetimes and has given me a new direction? So that is the idea, that one has to have supreme gratitude and reverence. Unless you have reverence for a person, you are not going to learn from him. It could be anybody. It could be even your, you know, tennis instructor. Unless you have respect for, and I find that also in my life, when I approached somebody with respect, I studied. And if I, like my typing teacher, I didn't like him. And I think I might have told you that. I never learned how to type. I spent 2 months going to typing school and I didn't like him, he didn't like. So the point is that if you don't like somebody, you're not going to study from him, not going to learn. So that's why having reverence for the guru is very important. But yeah, one, I think if you just accept everything that the teacher does, and there may be some things that may not be 100% good, so you don't accept, don't adopt everything. That's what they tell us. But I think I agree with you. No, because I mean, by guru, you don't have to wear orange clothes or wear a white habit. Guru is somebody who teaches, and if you can tell him, yeah, if you have any questions, I'll be glad to help. Because he looks upon you as an authority in that particular field. I don't see any problem with not necessarily making him officially a disciple where he has to come and touch your feet, but if he wants to approach you to ask questions, I don't see any problem with it. Yeah, that's a very excellent point. Do you want to speak more or you're done? Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. Ultimately, the teacher is within. It's the Lord's presence within that is invoked by the guru outside or by the scriptures or by reading or by, you know, satsang like this, meeting and talking, ultimately invokes the inner teacher, and ultimately everything has to come from within unless you are yourself, you know, convinced of the fact, and then ultimately the guidance comes from within. I agree 100% that no doubt the teacher is the Lord within. Ultimately what you're talking about is the Lord, you know, the Om or the consciousness or the life principle within. And contact with saintly people arouses that inner self. Because at this moment, the voice of the inner self we have suppressed, just by chasing after things in the world, we have suppressed this inner voice. But as you meet a wise person and you see how that person has evolved and progressed, you also realize that how you have gone wrong. And so he then turns your direction inward to the inner guru who will guide you and turns your attention away from the world to the inner self. Yes, but I agree 100%. The true guru is the Lord within the life consciousness. Absolutely. Thank you. That's a good point.
That's why I think it's so important for the person to try to make his mind more pure so that the light can come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the inner guru can come out. If you have a dirty mind, it won't reflect the light to come out.
True.
So you will remain in your mind. So this is so incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah, that's why we have four books to do, and the first one we took was Manashodhanam, Purification of Mind, because that is the first step, and I think by next week or next week after we'll be done. Then we'll go to the next one, which is acquiring knowledge, called Jnanasar, or the essence of knowledge. So the knowledge can only shine in a pure mind, and if the mind is full of dirt and impurities, the knowledge cannot shine. So absolutely right. Thank you.